You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Kick it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my land.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct
answers. How the hell did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
The dress is made of yards of highly chased.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for 3CR's showreel, a look at what's going on in the Australian film sector, but also how you as viewers of films are presented films, and that's the category we're in today. We're going to go and have a chat with the producer of the Dome Under Film Festival. If you haven't heard of it, then this is a perfect time to be listening to Warwick Lawrence. G'day, Warwick, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
I'm absolutely fascinated by this festival, Dome Under, which starts on Friday and runs through till Thursday the 30th of... Oh, no, sorry.
It runs through to Sunday.
Explain to my listeners what's going on.
So we're at the Melbourne Planetarium, which is based out of Science Works in Spotswood. So you're going to be seeing films that have been created specifically for the dome environment. If possible, I'd like to give a brief explanation of what that's like. We have a small planetarium. It seats about 150 people. So it's a small, intimate space. When everyone comes in, the seats will recline fully. So you're literally lying down, looking straight up. So, and suspended above you is a 16-metre dome, which is a huge screen. It's one of the largest screens in Australia. So the first thing you notice is, because you're lying back, you don't feel like you're in a normal cinema. It becomes quite a visceral experience. And because the dome completely fills your vision, in front of you, behind you, to the left and the right, completely fills your vision, it's incredibly immersive format. And the third thing I really love about this format is that it's very you lose sense of where the screen is, because in a traditional cinema, you're always in a room and the screen is that wall down in front of you. But in a planetarium, because it's a very curved space, a curved screen or surface, when it's very dark, you completely lose sense of where that is. And it's almost as though the audience is transcending the screen. It's almost like a transcendental experience in that sense. And it's the combination of those elements that, for me, makes the most incredibly magical experience that you can't get in any other format.
Yeah, that's what is so fascinating about this. I know that it starts on Friday and the session astronomy one is already sold out. And we were going to focus then on the next one, which was World Stories. And one of those particular ones is a film by a Tasmanian First Nations person, Dave Mangena Goff. And it's called. I was reading about it, and it sort of got me really going, because it's called Heart in Country, but it's got a indigenous name, Takila Milathia T, and it's immersive. Taking you through rhythms of day and night in a particular country, Palawa community in northern Tasmania, which is a perfect setting for people to understand country, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's a beautiful film. I was really quite surprised by this one. It was our only, in terms of the festival, it's the only Australian film we're running. It was one of you know, literally the only Australian film that we had as an entry for the festival. And I can tell, because I know most of the Full Dome community within Australia, so I was not aware of this production actually even happening. So but they are obviously people are working in the medium for the first time, and they've done a surprisingly excellent job of pulling off a Full Dome film. Having the Melbourne Planetarium, where you produce films, I'm very aware of the complexity of actually making content for this format. And it is it's a very heartfelt journey, and it really invites you into that culture through the rhythm of the day and the night.
Yeah, and it's on at 9 p.m. and runs to 10:30 p.m., which is one of the things, the elements of these particular experiences, because they're experiences, really. They're about an hour and a half long, is it? Would that be each program?
So each session we program, they run somewhere from an hour and 15 to about an hour and 45. Most full-time films, because of the nature of the format, the longest films that are ever made in this format are about 60 minutes. One of the reasons being when you're in this reclining position, people find they might not want to spend more time in that. It also goes historically to the fact that these films were really being made for planetariums, which are, you know, in museums and science centres or observatories. So they were always looking at like a half-hour experience or an hour experience. So the format has generally always sort of sat in that, where films are usually somewhere between half an hour and 45 minutes or so, although we do have a lot of shorts. So we have like an art selection, we have a mind-blowing art category, again, which unfortunately that one sold out, that's on Saturday night, but that contains a lot of films which might be 7 minutes or 8 minutes. We'll have films that are 3 minutes. So World Series, yeah, we have three films in that particular session. Tequila Mila, you know, Tea is also accompanied with a Canadian film. It's also a First Nations film called This Is Not a Ceremony. And that is a very powerful film because it deals with some of the systemic abuse that was faced by First Nations in Canada. And the last film in that particular session is called Antarctic Uruguay, which I was quite fascinated by because I did not know that Uruguay had a station down in Antarctica. And in terms of a documentary explaining how Antarctic stations work, it was absolutely excellent because it had a lot of information I had no idea about.
This concept of a full dome production, is it like factual merging with animation? Does it take a different kind of mind to create a film like this?
It definitely requires a different kind of mind. There's a couple of questions in there. This is the first one in terms of techniques. For a long time, it was very difficult to create live action for this format because the screens are so big and you need such a wide-angle field of view. But the cameras really just didn't exist. It's really only since the emergence of VR, some of the technology has sort of kind of caught up, where we can now do live action. So traditionally, there was always a lot of animation that was kind of created for it. So we've got a lot, you know, in the festival, we have a whole array of amazing, fantastic kids' films. So animation has always been a very popular technique for creating content for this. The second part of that is a different mindset. It's always interesting when I have new filmmakers who come and work at the Planetarium wanting to create content. One of the things I always sort of say to them, some of them will ask me, oh, where am I going to put this on screen? I'm going, don't think about it as a screen. It's not a screen. Just think about the fact that you're transporting your audience somewhere. So just think about where you want to put your audience. Don't worry about where things are going to appear on the screen because the screen effectively will be disappearing. You just need to take the audience somewhere.
Oh, it's amazing, absolutely amazing. It leads to so many questions. One of them is, of course, you've got, like you said, you've got a children's program. Is there kids have different ways of perceiving things. Like, do you have an age limit? Is there a thing where littler kids would find it overbearing, or do they find it fantastic?
generally, they all. I think they all find it fantastic. I do know of some planetarians who have put age limits on. They won't let in people, children under the age of three. But we've never done that. I think the only issue sometimes we have is because the seats reclined fully and it requires your body weight, and sometimes the younger kids can't quite keep the seats reclined fully. But in that case, they can sort of often all sit with their mum or their dad.
Oh, right. So that was the thing. Do people get up and move around?
Well, generally, no, it's very, very dark in the planetarium. Mm-hmm. Within these sessions, because we are running multiple films, we do actually put in intermissions for them. So even the kids' sessions might have 2 half-hour films, but we'll put like an intermission in between so people can get up and go out and get another drink, or if they need to go to the bathroom, or just stretch their legs.
Yeah, right. Okay. And how do you project? I mean, what are the projectors? How does that work? What's the technology?
So we have 6 4K projectors. So the projectors are all seamlessly blended across the dome. So they're very large Sony 4K projectors. And we have something like the computer system that runs that. It has about 13 computers. So there's separate computers running different projectors. So, it's quite a technical back end for the system.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. What about the sound?
We have a 7.1 surround sound system. Generally, most films come in. We will play most of the films at 5.1. I think we might have a couple of student films this year that might still just be in stereo, but it's a really good sound system. When we run on, we also run films on Friday nights. Last year, we were running a Dark Side of the Moon film, and the soundtrack for that was absolutely killer in that space.
Oh, wow, that's absolutely amazing. And getting back to the original discussion about the Dave Goss film, you said that this was the first Australian, only Australian film that was put in or offered for the festival. Yeah. And you're saying that you've got some student films. Is there more interest growing in this sort of production area?
I definitely think there is. I've been working the last few years with BCA animation students to create short work for it. I've previously worked with Deakin University as well, doing workshops with them. It's a medium that people find absolutely fascinating, and they do love working for it, but it's also one where it can be difficult to see, to get a return out of your investment on it.
Oh, yeah.
So there are a lot of people who come and they make their one full-dome film and they've gone, well, I've done that. I'm not going to make a full-dome film. It's very expensive and very technically challenging to do. But there's still many people overseas. And, if you look overseas, there's a lot of planetariums that make content. There is a lot of independent studios that are making content. Certainly, there's a lot of students making content. Germany is an absolute powerhouse of full-dome production because they've been in the planetarium business since 1925. And then we're having new countries this year we've had 4 films from Canada, and they're becoming quite a powerhouse in the sense that their national film board is really supporting them, as well as some of the bigger planetariums and some big distribution companies over there. And so you're sort of seeing that the films coming out from them are very artistic, very high production values, and really, really great quality. And also this year we've had 4 films come in from Taiwan, because in 2018 the Taiwanese government set up the Taiwan Contemporary Culture Lab, or C-Lab, and so we've had 4 films come from them this year, and what's really interesting about them is they've kind of got their own cultural and visual aesthetic, which I've not really seen anywhere else. And part of this visual aesthetic is they really like using monochrome and a very, very dark visual. And the very dark visuals really work well in the planetarium. And so their works are really quite unearthly, very dark. We've got some of those are playing in our Future Vision session, which is on the Sunday.
Yeah, well, this is really magical stuff. You're called a digital production designer, and you're also the founder of the Dome Under Film Festival. How do you get a title like that? What's your career trajectory?
my career trajectory. I started off in the film industry. I worked for about 15 years as a camera assistant in the film industry. Eventually, I got into animation and was fortunate enough to find a job at the Planetarium. I remember the first time going in and just looking up at a film and just going, wow, this is amazing, and I would really, really love to work in this format. And because I had that sort of film background, I was much more interested in looking at it from a cinematic approach. And I love the immersive nature of it, but for me, I was always questioning, like, what are the stories that we can tell in it? Where can we take our audience to, and the stories that we can give them in these new environments?
Oh, it's fantastic. I love it. How do people get tickets, and how do they find more about the program?
Well, you could either go to the Science World website, or you could just search the Dome Under Film Festival. Tickets are all available online, and the whole program's online. You can even download a PDF version of the program as well.
Thanks very much for talking to us today, Warwick.
Oh, thank you, Annie.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
You're with Annie on Showreel. 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. I'll have to say that the Dome Under Film Festival sounds fantastic, and we were just talking to Warwick Lawrence, who is the founder of the Dome Under Film Festival, which is at the Planetarium in Science Works in Spotwood. It sounds like you should get a ticket, have a look at the program, work out which things you think would be the most interesting to look at. We're going to go to another film. I had a chat with Michael Dillon a while ago because he had a film, his latest film, The Great White Whale, on at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. But we're revisiting this because it is going to be, he sent out a release saying that the Great White Whale film won its 8th international award last week and plans to be finalised for 2 Q&A screenings in Melbourne. And if you haven't seen this film, if you're into derring do and extraordinary films about real events, then this is a film for you. It's going to be on Thursday, February the 6th at 6:30 at the Sun Cinema in Yarraville, always a nice place to go. It's been organised by the Australian Geographic, and he's going to be presented with a Lifetime of Adventure Award, and he's going to be interviewed by the chairman of the Australian Geographic Society, Chrissy Goldrick. So look up Sun Cinema and you can get a ticket to the 6:30 screening, February the 6th. It's also going to be, and there's going to be a Q&A screening at the Nova in Carlton on February the 15th at 2:50 p.m. And as I said, this is one of the most extraordinary action films I've ever seen. I had a chat with Michael Dillon at the time when it was on at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival, so we'll revisit that conversation.
Now, I know I've spoken to you before, I think, because you were part of Ocean to the Sky, right, which was also another rollicking yarn about Edmund Hillary. And
that's right, yes.
Yeah, going along the Ganges. And in a sense, The Great White Whale has got some elements in the filmmaking sense similar, in the sense that you're using footage from the actual expedition in the 1965, right? Tell me about that.
Well, yes, that's one aspect of it, because it was shot, they both, despite the very difficult circumstances, this huge long voyage through rough seas and the difficult climb of a mountain, they did shoot it on old 16mm Bolex cameras where you had to wind up. And because we had that footage, and now these days it could be scanned so well up to 4K, so it looks like on a big screen, like you're actually there, you can't see any grey. So yeah, we had that aspect of it, and then the other was sitting people down in their armchairs. And the big difference this time was that one of them didn't just sit down on his armchair. He actually stood up and to my total surprise, sang these 10 wonderful songs he'd composed about the expedition. So that that gave a I could see that we had the potential of a pretty good film with a great musical potential aspect as well.
Oh, look, everything about this is it really takes the viewer into the palm of the hands of this expedition. So tell my listeners what this expedition was, because it's really quite a rollicking yarn.
Well, first of all, it was an attempt to climb Australia's highest mountain. Now, I should explain that because everyone thinks it's Mount Kosciuszko, but actually it's on a territory owned by Australia, which is called Heard Island, which is halfway between Australia and South Africa. And that on the highest mountain on that island is actually 500 metres higher than Kosciuszko. So it's Australian, so it's Australia's highest mountain. But it's extremely difficult to get to. So what these people, in 1963, three Australians attempted to climb it by sailing down there with the Antarctic Division. They almost died. And then the most part of this new film is about their, like Moby Dick, they almost killed them. It looked like a great white whale. But they were determined to go back and try again. So the bulk of the film is the second voyage where, again, they sail down for 2 months through the roughest seas in the world, have difficulty landing on this island and attempting it for the second time.
Now, you talk about that first expedition and you use reenactments, and it was really, really horrible, I have to say. I mean, very frightening. You did a really good job in reenacting.
Well, it was. I should explain it. Oh, thank you. Well, it was partly actual photos I took at the time, but one of the ways they almost died, of the five, was when they were almost entombed in a snow cave. It was snowing so hard that they almost suffocated in there and had to escape at the last minute with their lives. And so we had to reenact that bit because they were too busy to saving their lives to actually film that as well.
Well, the thing about this film, which is so remarkable, in fact, is, I mean, the story itself, of course, but it's the way you've made this film, which is so remarkable, because you've got the real footage, which is just magnificent, but you've also got several layers of, and I've just talked about reenactment, but you've also got all these other fascinating musical as well as historical references that bind the whole thing together.
Yes, well, I think we had their stills and we had a bit of historical footage of the Heard Island, which was the first Australian Antarctic base. But we also, and to me it's so important, because that one of these interviewees had got up and sung these wonderful songs, and I then thought, well, the best thing to do with that is to ask the same composer who also worked on Ocean to Sky to just make it even better in terms musically. So he put wonderful musical score behind the songs, composed new wonderful music, and I just love it as a music score. Somebody said you can watch this film in the cinema with your eyes, we can see it in the cinema with your eyes closed and you'll still like it just for the music score.
Yeah, yeah. But there's also other things, because a lot of that footage would have been silent, and you've tailored it with sound landscapes.
Oh, yes. Well, what happened was that they, in those days, it was really hard to film anything, and especially because I started my own career kind of around that time too. You had these really big cameras that were difficult to use, and if you wanted to record any sound at all, you had to do it separately with a separate tape recorder. Well, I didn't even have that, so we had to recreate every single sound in this film from scratch. And that's a big job too. And I got another person involved, Michael Worthington, with the editor, Mike Balson. Those two, so that's another reason why you had to come to life sound-wise as well as music-wise. So the aim, of course, is the people in the cinema really think they're there, undertaking this expedition themselves.
Well, you did. You really succeeded. I was really impressed. I just thought, oh, my God. I like the people running across the wet sand and then falling over. Slap, 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 slap. Fantastic stuff.
Oh, no, it is a real art, but it takes a lot of work. And of course, in a cinema, you also get it in it's a surround sound, so it's a great cinema experience. And I'm really happy with it, to be honest, considering where we had to start from. Thanks for your own sort of, I'm glad you liked it.
Oh, yeah, well, then there's also, I refer to the fact that the mind space of the men who actually involved themselves in this expedition included things like the extraordinary daring do of people like Shackleton and stuff like that. You weave those kind of elements in, which are important for people who probably don't understand or remember that this is the world that these people's minds were inhabiting.
Oh, yeah. Look, I think it was a real epic adventure. And the people that you don't wonder whether anybody these days would actually go and do such a thing, to sail down in 10 of them in quite a small yacht with no toilet and no seasick remedies or anything like that, no communications. And they were sort of from the heroic age of exploration. And they deserve to be remembered for that. This is only 60 years ago, of course, but things were just so different then.
That's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic film. I just found it the most interesting exploration, but also as a filmmaking effort, it's just extraordinary. And I noticed that you're a documentarian, filmmaker, adventurer and cinematographer. And yes, you are, because The Great White Whale is just fantastic.
Well, thank you, Annie.
Is there anything else you want to say about this?
No. Basically, the chapter is self-funded and we're relying on people to come out to the cinemas and see it. We don't have a distributor, and so it's a matter of us hiring, and we plan to, in various other parts of Australia, hiring cinemas and hoping to find an audience for it.
Yeah, and if you want to see The Great White Whale, it really is quite an amazing film. If you expedition is just mind-blowing, I'll have to say, and it's all real, it's true. And if you want to see it, it's on 6th of February, Thursday 6th of February, at 6:30 p.m. at the Sun Cinema Yarraville, and Michael is going to be presented with a Lifetime of Adventure Award from Australian Geographic. He's going to be interviewed by the chairman of the Australian Geographic Society, Chrissy Goldrick. And if you can't get there, you can go to the Nova on the 15th of February, Saturday, at 2:50 p.m. And you can see it there, and go to those different places in order to get the details and a ticket. That's it for Showreel this morning, and we're now going to go into Published or Not. We'll go out with Dirty Three, Indian Love Song.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.